This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. An undercover video shot by an activist group that was released in mid-July appears to show a Planned Parenthood official discussing how her group provides researchers with parts from aborted fetuses. The Center for Medical Progress, which made the video, says it's evidence that Planned Parenthood is selling fetal tissue, which is illegal. Planned Parenthood says the video is heavily edited for effect and that it has done nothing wrong, legally or ethically, and that any money that is exchanged is reimbursement or donation for the cost of tissue donation, which Planned Parenthood says is done with the consent of patients. This story has unfolded nationally in the last several weeks and included a failed Senate vote over whether or not to strip federal funding from Planned Parenthood. But then just last week, a panel in New Hampshire did vote to eliminate state funding for Planned Parenthood of Northern New England, which serves New Hampshire, Vermont, and Maine. So today we're going to look at why, and we'll hear from the CEO of Planned Parenthood of Northern New England, PPNNE, about the services the organization provides to women and a few men in our region. Joining me first today is Chris Sununu. He's one of the five people who make up the New Hampshire Executive Council. The council voted 3-2 to eliminate funding, and Sununu was in that majority. Chris Sununu, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thanks, Jane. Thanks for having me on.
So as I said, the Executive Council on Wednesday voted, and this was a vote along party lines, against renewing two family planning contracts for Planned Parenthood centers in New Hampshire, and those are worth $319,000 annually. Your vote was in some ways considered the deciding vote or the swing vote because you voted in favor of funding Planned Parenthood in the past and have been public that you are a pro-choice Republican.
That's
so
right.
What changed in this case?
Well, obviously, I think most people know a lot of things have changed. As you stated, you know, I am pro-choice. I have been supportive of Planned Parenthood for these contracts and services. I've been a very big proponent of making sure women have good access, lots of choices to healthcare services, whether they be women's reproductive services or even some just basic needs that some women really rely on have relied on Planned Parenthood for those services. What we have now is we have a federal investigation, frankly, at a federal level. We have many, many states doing investigations to see if there was criminal wrongdoing. They are based on these videos that have come out, and I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a legal expert. I can tell you no one in that room when we held this vote really knows. And I think that's really what we're getting at. We're saying this isn't about pro-choice, pro-life. This isn't even really Republican-Democrat. The Executive Council in New Hampshire is a pure checks and balance. I know it's a unique thing. A lot of folks in Vermont probably don't understand how our process works here, but it's a pure checks and balance on the power of the governor. We don't want anyone in to have any too much power at any given time. One of the primary things we do is we review virtually all the contracts in the state, all the major contracts at least. And the reason for that is we do it in an open, transparent, public way, and we're allowed to say, were things bid out properly? Are these businesses that are in good standing? Do they have ethical and legal scrutiny hanging over them, as Planned Parenthood does now? And if this were any other contractor, I mean, someone who sells us snowplows, you pick any contract you want. We do thousands a year. This would have never even reached our desk. But the fact that they're going out of their way to make such exceptions to bring this one to us, when there really are serious questions that have to be answered, that's all we're saying. We ask the governor, hey, governor, could we have the Attorney General investigate? Let's look at Planned Parenthood in New England. What's happening in New Hampshire? Let's get to the details and find out what is going on in our own state. She flat out refused, rejected it outright. Well, that's not right. We're just asking questions. That's exactly what our job is here. So when you do have the ethical and legal scrutiny hanging over it, we simply said, no, we are not going to do business with a group that has these type of questions hanging over them. And let's find alternative choices for these women.
Again, today we're getting a local look at a national story. Planned Parenthood of Northern New England serves patients in Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine. And in a few minutes, we're going to be hearing from the CEO of PPNNE about the services the organization provides here and how this national discussion about how Planned Parenthood handles fetal tissue has affected regional services. But again, one clear result is last week's decision by New Hampshire's Executive Council to stop giving state money to the organization. And we're talking right now with a member of the council, Chris Sununu, who voted to stop funding. Listeners, if you have a question, if you would like to weigh in on this, please go to the Vermont Edition Facebook page. You can post a comment there, or you can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Chris, so are you hoping that Planned Parenthood will not continue to function in New Hampshire right now?
Of course not. I think, frankly, your question is leading in itself. Planned Parenthood has not lost, is not going to lose the ability to provide any of these services. You know, when you have a council members and you have the governor saying 13,000 women are going to lose, that's a lie. Nobody is losing any services in the state. These were simply supplemental funds that Planned Parenthood historically sometimes has and has not have had access to. They still have the bulk of their funds still come directly from the federal government, not through the state. They contract directly from the federal government for these services, and they are absolutely still in place. So to imply that we're trying to put them out of business or something, that's not it. We want choices. I can tell you in my district, with these specific funds, Planned Parenthood is the only choice women have. That's not right.
The only
women
choice
should have
what?
Choices.
The
they
only
should
choice
have choices.
For what?
I'm sorry?
The only choice for what?
For what they call Title X funds, which these state funds then supplement. So if you want access to these services and be able to use these funds, which are out there, right now only Planned Parenthood in Greater Manchester and on the Seacoast region gets to use those funds. That's not right. I said to the governor very clearly, let's go out and find other. There are lots of alternatives out there. Let's go out and make sure they have access to these funds, too, so women have a choice. There's nothing wrong. What is wrong with choice in women's health care? I mean, the fact that the governor outright rejected that request was appalling to me, really appalling to me. And it really showed the political biases. Now we're getting into the politics of it. You know, the Democrats like to say, oh, this is a political agenda to attack Planned Parenthood. Look, no one at that executive council table took any money from Planned Parenthood into their campaigns other than the two Democrat executive counselors and the millions of dollars that went into Governor Hassan's funds. So to then turn around and try to claim that this is some sort of political attack, I've been supportive of Planned Parenthood in the past. I've been supportive of these funds in the past. And I take it personally when people start challenging our character. This is about process. This is about who we're going to choose to do business with. And it's about clearing up some very serious legal allegations on this group.
So I don't mean it as a leading question, but if your vote is to not give that state money to Planned Parenthood of Northern New England, but you're saying they're not going to lose any services,
no.
You don't see them going away, is this then for you just a symbolic vote that you don't want to be doing business with the organization
now? My job is to protect how we use, the state taxpayer funds. The direct funds from the federal government, that's a federal issue, and the Senate and House have to take that up, and they have, and they've continued to fund it. Okay, fine, that's their choice. My job is to protect who we're going to do direct business with in the state of New Hampshire. This is a group that just has too much hanging over them. I think it's hard to argue that maybe we shouldn't take a second look. That's all we're asking. I'm not saying shut them down completely. We're not saying that at all. And like I said, no one is really losing services here. They're just not. Planned Parenthood has had historical periods where they have had and have not had access to these funds. No one gets denied service. No one does. We're talking about a multi-billion-dollar organization. The other thing I know Jennifer Frizzell, who really heads the Planned Parenthood here in New Hampshire, a very nice lady, I think very well-intentioned. I think I've spoken to Megan Gallagher once or twice on the phone before. But, to say that Planned Parenthood of Northern New England is not part of the national story, is not part of Planned Parenthood, that's ridiculous, right? I mean, it's a federation. It's all part of the same organization. If they were separate, change your name, right, and have a different mission statement, for goodness sakes. But they're all part of the same organization. They're all tied together. So when they come out and say Planned Parenthood of Northern New England has nothing to do with those videos or those allegations, I mean, that's ridiculous. So it's part of the same organization. They have to stand up. They have to honestly say, you know, maybe we need to take a look at how we're doing business and what we're doing. We haven't heard any of that out of Planned Parenthood, and that's probably the most disappointing aspect. So I think until we get some real answers, it's going to be – I don't see, at least from my point of view, from my single vote, the state funding coming back into play with these services. There are lots of other choices out there for these women, and we have to make sure that those funds are provided to those other facilities who can do just as good a work as Planned Parenthood.
Well, we will be seeing if we can get any answers from Planned Parenthood of Northern New England. In just a few minutes, we will be speaking with Megan Gallagher, the CEO of PPNNE. Right now, we're talking with Chris Sununu, who is on the Executive Council in New Hampshire. We also got a note from Joseph Kenney, who is one of the three New Hampshire Executive Councilors who voted to defund Planned Parenthood. Here's part of of the statement he sent us this morning. He says, I have been shocked by recent videos that show Planned Parenthood officials discussing the harvesting of organs from aborted babies. These videos raise serious questions about Planned Parenthood's engagement in depraved and potentially illegal practices that must be fully investigated. That is why I joined with my fellow counselors in demanding the New Hampshire governor investigate these allegations and put our taxpayers at ease. I support preserving access to health services for low-income women, and I believe we can fund those priorities without using taxpayer dollars to fund a private organization that has shocked the conscience of so many people in New Hampshire, and both parties should fully demand an investigation. And let's go to Mike, who's calling in from Lyme, New Hampshire. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a question for Congressman Sununu based upon my wife's work with Planned Parenthood as a volunteer for 40 years and the help that Planned Parenthood gave to me in my business. And that is, how is it in the best interest of the state to take services away from thousands of women in our counties around here and face increased unintended pregnancies, undiagnosed and unheeded, untreated health conditions as a result of his vote?
It's very clear. No one is losing services. You have to get past that rhetoric. I know it's an action line that they like to tag on to get people emotionally attached. No one is losing services. You find me someone that's turned away at the Planned Parenthood doors, and we'll talk about it. But let me tell you, no one is losing services, and there are lots of organizations that can also provide these types of services if they choose not to go to Planned Parenthood. They're still getting their federal funding, which is the vast majority of their funding. When they lost state funding before, they didn't cut any services. We're talking about a $4 billion organization here nationally. So nobody is losing services. I know that's an emotional piece of rhetoric that they like to spit out there to stir up this anger against the vote, but the facts are still the facts.
But so when you talk about the options that women have in New Hampshire, let's put this into your neighborhood. If there's a woman who's underinsured or uninsured and wants to go somewhere to get free or reduced cost birth control, where will they go if not Planned Parenthood? Because you say there are lots of options for women in these situations.
Well, there are. So, there are organizations who I have personally reached out to and said, hey, would you bid on these funds? Would you bid on the contract? Because that's the way we do it, through a contract process. And the two words I got back were, it's not a whole lot of money for these clients, and you know what? We really don't want a turf war, a battle with Planned Parenthood. These are organizations, like in my neighborhood, would be like Exeter Health or Goodwin Medical, or there's a variety of them. I live in the seacoast of New Hampshire. We have a very good variety of healthcare providers down here that have specialties in everything left and right. So again, nobody wants to fight Planned Parenthood for the funds. Well, I've taken the lead in working with Commissioner Tumpas here in the state of New Hampshire and said, okay, now that Planned Parenthood is kind of out of the picture right now, let's go out and re-engage some of these folks to provide these services. They're not so specialized. Most other facilities can't handle them in some way. Don't forget, a lot of these services that Planned Parenthood purports to have, mammograms, they refer them out. They don't even do them in their own offices. So, when I was supportive of this contract, that was fine because I knew there were, again, other providers out there who could support Planned Parenthood and ultimately support the women and the constituents who need the services. To me, when I went against the Republican Party and voted for this contract multiple times, I did it because it was for the constituents. At the end of the day, they're the ones that matter. And at the end of the day, there's no loss of service here. There's many other providers who can provide it. This kind of leads into the separate Medicaid discussion, right? We've increased Medicaid. We've done expanded Medicaid here in this state, which actually allows access to a whole host of women in a whole host of facilities that they've never had before. That is technically separate from these Title X funds. But the doors are already opening, allowing women a lot more choices out there. So, especially in my area of the state where there are so many, many different choices, I encourage them to look for those alternatives, find the doctors that you want. Right now, there's just too much hanging over Planned Parenthood's head. On a legal standpoint, it isn't just we saw some videos and we're disturbed. I mean, even Hillary Clinton said she was disturbed by the videos. But we're talking about legal matters. Were they criminal? Did they do things criminally wrong here? Nobody knows right now, but that really needs to be answered. I think that's more than a fair question for an elected official to ask to ensure that the taxpayer dollars are being spent in a prudent manner.
Chris Sununu, before we let you go, we got a note from Ray who asks, should Planned Parenthood be cleared of all of these allegations, then would you restore funding?
Well, it's an interesting question. I think that there's a lot of hypotheticals. I think one thing that we do know is that there's a lot more of this story to be played out. We've heard rumors of more videos. We've heard rumors of where some of these investigations are going to go. I don't want to, again, guess at what my vote might be, further down the road. There's a lot more of this to play out right now, and so a lot more variables are going to come into play. I can tell you right now, there's just a massive amount of questions hanging over this group, a group I've supported before. I'm very disappointed to hear that there could have been criminal activity. We'll see where it goes from here. Right now, let's make sure that the people in the state have access to health care, which they do. Let's make sure they're taking advantage of their options, which we will promote, and we'll take our steps forward from there.
Chris Sununu is one of the five members of New Hampshire's Executive Council, which recently voted to stop state funding for Planned Parenthood of Northern New England. Chris, thank you very much for sharing your perspective.
Thanks, Jane.
Coming up, we'll talk with the CEO of Planned Parenthood of Northern New England about how the loss of funding will affect her organization, and we'll hear more about the services Planned Parenthood provides in the region. We'd like your take as well. If you have comments you'd like to share, go to the Vermont Edition Facebook page or send a note to vermontedition@vpr.net, or you can call us. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. We've just heard about why New Hampshire has stopped giving state funds to Planned Parenthood of Northern New England over concerns about the larger organization's practices around fetal tissue donation. And if you have a question about the services PPNNE provides, or if you'd like to comment on the New Hampshire decision, post a note on the Vermont Edition Facebook page or call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Vicki says, I'm speechless with anger over New Hampshire's vote to defund its Planned Parenthood health centers. This decision feels like a personal attack on women in our region. No one can understand how an individual woman feels about her own reproductive and sexual health. Defunding Planned Parenthood removes a safe space, sometimes the only safe space, for women of all ages to receive basic care and fact-based information. I'm terrified that despite Vermont's strong history in supporting women's health, these extreme actions in New Hampshire will filter across our border. Georgia says there are numerous community health centers in Vermont that offer a wider range of services than Planned Parenthood, including ongoing care, not just contraceptives, abortion, and STD treatment. Yet the entire Title X allotment of $1.5 million is granted exclusively to Planned Parenthood in Vermont annually, on top of $300,000 from the state general fund. Women and teens deserve better, she says. And Stephanie says Planned Parenthood Federation of America, a supposed nonprofit, posted a $1 billion balance in the last annual report, receives a $500 million in taxpayer funds, accepts huge amount in charitable giving, and pays its CEO $550,000. Why on earth should we support this organization when it is rich in money and also clearly gaining income from the sale of human body parts? All right, we're going to talk about these things now. More of your comments to come. You can post them online at vpr.net. But joining me to talk a little bit about what Planned Parenthood of Northern New England does is Megan Gallagher. She's the CEO of the organization. Thank you very much for talking with us.
Thanks for having me, Jane.
And again, to remind people, Planned Parenthood of Northern New England serves Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine, and it is one organization that has centers throughout all three states. So let me ask you first, because it's the question that has come up so much in this national debate and national conversation about Planned Parenthood. Does Planned Parenthood of Northern New England do any tissue donation?
Planned Parenthood of Northern New England does not have a tissue donation program, but let me be clear, Jane. No Planned Parenthood across the country profits from the voluntary donation of fetal tissue for life-saving research. This is simply an option that some affiliates make available to women who choose to do so.
So you're saying that in some cases there is fetal tissue donation and that is an optional choice for women who choose to do that. But just to be clear, that is not a program that you have in place in Planned Parenthood of Northern New England. So you don't do tissue donation at all, fetal tissue donation at all?
That is correct.
And when you say that it is not profiting, that Planned Parenthood is not profiting and that the patients themselves are not, you know, that certainly is one of the allegations that's come up, that Planned Parenthood is in fact profiting. And there is money exchanged in some cases. So explain why you think this is not a for-profit, not a profit spinner for the organization.
Absolutely. These claims are simply outrageous and have been revealed to be politically motivated. The law that governs fetal tissue donation allows for healthcare providers to be reimbursed for the cost of facilitating the tissue donation.
And that costs
From the reports that we've heard, there was a recent biomedical ethicist who reported that the average cost of facilitating this transfer of tissue is in the $80 range.
Let's go to Liza, who's calling in from Claremont. Hi, Liza. Your thoughts?
Hi there. I am a resident of Claremont and a community health educator here, and I think it's all too facile for folks to imply that there are other choices for women in rural parts of New Hampshire or rural parts of Vermont and Maine, for that matter. So Mr. Sununu's suggestion that nothing will change, I'm afraid quite a lot will change. Our local clinic already has very limited hours, very limited days that they are available. And we have one of the highest STI rates and teen birth rates in the state. So access to contraception is critical, and access to protection from STIs, knowledge of whether or not you have one, and treatment is also critical. I'm very concerned that this decision is motivated by politics and has nothing to do with our legal code, which is innocent until proven guilty.
Liza, thanks for your call. I appreciate that perspective. Megan Gallagher, what about that question? Liza's afraid that defunding Planned Parenthood of Northern New England, at least the state funds in New Hampshire, will have an impact on access to health care for women. Will it?
The reality is that, as anybody in healthcare knows, making ends meet under the best circumstances is difficult. And we are able to provide services to over 40,000 women and men across our network of 21 health centers because of a combination of state, federal, and philanthropic dollars. Through those resources, we provide $7.3 million of free and discounted care. Absolutely. Any effort to undermine the financial position of Planned Parenthood will have an impact. That said, we put our patients first always, and we will do everything that we can to prevent services from being interrupted. But political efforts to defund Planned Parenthood will significantly interfere with our ability to do so in the long run.
Okay, but let's talk specifically and concretely about what might happen from the loss of $319,000 in New Hampshire state funds, and that's continued over 2 years, so a total of about $640,000 over 2 years. I understand that no organization wants to say, hey, we can do without that money, but you're trying to tread a fine line here between saying that money is critical and we're still going to provide the services that we need to provide, which is what Chris Sununu is saying will happen, that no services are going to be affected. So can you be a little more concrete about what you think will happen?
The reality is that the impact of the loss of funding is not immediately clear to us. We were defunded a week ago. It was a sudden and unexpected decision. And our board is very carefully considering the long and short-term impacts of this loss of funding. And again, we will view any changes that we have absolutely been placed in a position to make, we will view those decisions through the lens of the priority of ensuring that women and men have access to the high-quality services that we provide.
So what could that mean? Layoffs in the executive organization? Closure of hours?
At this point, we haven't taken anything off the table.
What is $320,000 in the scope of your budget? What's the budget for Planned Parenthood of Northern New England?
So the $300,000 that the Executive Council defunded represents about a third of the federal and state funding that we receive in the state of New Hampshire. So it is a significant amount of money in terms of, again, our ability to provide the discounted care that I described earlier. And this care, I want to emphasize, is for a broad range of reproductive health services, including annual exams, birth control, cancer screenings, testing and treatment for sexually transmitted infections. The impact of the Executive Council's decision will impact basic access to preventative health services.
So just again, though, to figure out, to get a sense of your full budget, we're talking about $300,000 from state funds in New Hampshire. You say that's about a third of the federal and state funds coming from New Hampshire. My understanding is that you also receive about $700,000 a year from the state of Vermont, and about $400,000 comes through the state of Maine. But you also have other sources. We've talked about Medicaid. We've talked a little bit about Title X funds, and you mentioned philanthropic funds. So what's your total budget?
Our total budget is $20 million. Again, all of these resources come together to enable us to ensure that women and men have access to essential reproductive health services.
Let's go to one of our listener comments. We have Stephen in Montpelier who says, Planned Parenthood has been an important part of our family's life in Vermont for many years, and we're grateful for the services it provides. What most concerns me about defunding Planned Parenthood is the loss of family planning services for both men and women. I have two young granddaughters living in Vermont. If this unwarranted attack succeeds in Vermont, as it has in New Hampshire, where will these girls and their friends obtain the services they will surely need? No sign, though, of this happening in Vermont and Maine at this point, is there, Megan?
Well, Jane, the concern that I have is that there is still a discussion of a federal effort to defund Planned Parenthood. We are incredibly grateful to Senators Leahy and Sanders for standing strong with Planned Parenthood in last week's vote. They both spoke out in support of the services that we provide.
And this was a procedural vote in the Senate.
It was. And they also voted against defunding Planned Parenthood. Again, this is a long-term issue. We rely on the array of funds that are available to us to ensure access to the services that we provide, and all of those pieces are equally important, and removing any of those pieces jeopardizes our ability to provide services in the long term.
Much of the debate over Planned Parenthood seems to come down to people's views on abortion. What percentage of the services provided by Planned Parenthood of Northern New England is related to abortion services?
Approximately 7% of the services that we provide are related to abortion services. But I think the more important conversation for us to be having here is the fact that in this country, 50% of pregnancies are unintended. 1 in 2 pregnancies are unintended. In Vermont, that percentage is 46%. The Department of Health has a stated goal of reducing the unintended pregnancy rate to 35%. And we are at a unique moment in time where we actually have an opportunity to have a significant impact on that number. The Affordable Care Act makes birth control available at no cost to women. Contraceptive technology has come a long way, and we have highly reliable and safe methods that women are increasingly choosing. And we have research that shows that if we educate women early and often on the most effective, on all contraceptive methods and their effectiveness, and if we remove financial barriers, that we can have a meaningful impact on unintended pregnancies. And given that low-income women are 5 times as likely to have unintended pregnancies, by having that conversation, we are having a conversation about creating pathways out of poverty. Unintended pregnancies are one of the leading reasons that derail women's educational and career goals. I think that should be our priority.
So why do Vermonters, why do Northern New Englanders need Planned Parenthood for that kind of birth control and family planning?
In Vermont, Planned Parenthood is the only family planning provider. One of the callers mentioned earlier suggested that might be a problem. The state conducts a competitive bid process, and the reality is that we are recognized for the high-quality care that we provide.
Let me just stop you, because when you say the only family planning provider, you mean the only recipient of Title X federal funds? Because people can go to their primary care physician for family planning. So what do you mean by the only family planning provider?
Provider that's focused on family planning services. So I mentioned the services that we provide earlier, annual GYN exams. For many of our patients, we are the only provider that they serve. And we're particularly well positioned to meet the healthcare needs of young, healthy women because our services are designed to meet their needs.
We got a note from Sharon who says, PPNNE spends hundreds of thousands of dollars on lobbying annually and has diverted hundreds of thousands more over the years to their action fund. The action fund was fined $30,000 for spending over $100,000 on ads supporting the election of Peter Shumlin in violation of Vermont campaign finance law. Small price to pay to put in office those who will keep filling your coffers. Can PPNNE really claim it's not politically motivated?
I have to say, with regard to the campaign finance violations, we discovered that we had made errors. We quickly corrected them and put systems in place to ensure that they do not happen again. And I will say that the idea that Planned Parenthood is politically motivated is deceptive at best. Planned Parenthood supports champions of women's health care. We are unabashed in that as the loudest and strongest voice for women's health, and we are not ashamed to be partnering with women's health champions that are in office across Vermont, starting with Senators Leahy and Sanders, Representative Welch, the Shumlin administration, and the majority of state representatives and state senators. We are proud to stand strong with them.
We got a note from a woman who didn't want to use her name who wrote in to say Planned Parenthood is an important source of health care for women. In my case, it provided fertility treatment, which helped me become pregnant. We had insurance, but a very high deductible, and it was really the only place we could afford at that time. Planned Parenthood is a place for women to access safe, affordable, quality health care, and I support them fully. Susan says, by providing accurate information and up-to-the-minute methods of birth control and, yes, abortion services when needed, Planned Parenthood helps young women and young men achieve their dreams, get an education and a good job instead of getting pushed into poverty by unwanted pregnancy. I will continue to support the fight against poverty and restrictions on women's rights by supporting Planned Parenthood. And let's go to Susanna, who's calling in from Starksboro. Hi, Susanna.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a comment and a question. First, when I was a young girl, my mom, who is a single mother, drove me to Planned Parenthood, showed me where it was, and said, if you need anything for your gynecological care, including contraception, this is where you go. This is who I trust, even if you can't talk to me about it. And as a woman who didn't have a lot of money, to trust her baby girl with this organization really said something to me. Our family is always been huge supporters of Planned Parenthood because of the services they provide to women like me and to our family and our friends. So my question for Megan is, how can Planned Parenthood supporters like myself help fight to maintain the health services that your organization provides?
Susanna, thanks for the call. So Susanna, wondering, how can she help?
Thanks so much for the question, Susanna. There are a variety of ways that you can help. First and foremost, I would say become a patient. Becoming a patient is one of the best ways to support Planned Parenthood. Not everybody knows that we accept all forms of insurance, so we welcome everybody and believe that everybody has the right to access the high-quality care that we provide. Become an activist. Or join our volunteer action teams that are forming around the state to promote our work. And, of course, we appreciate your financial support to help bridge this gap in these difficult times. Please visit our website at ppnne.org to find out more.
That's Megan Gallagher. She's CEO of Planned Parenthood of Northern New England, which serves Vermont, Maine, and New Hampshire. Thanks very much for being on the program.
Thanks so much, Jane.
Coming up, why are children in the United States being protected from rotavirus by taking an oral vaccine when that same vaccine is much less effective in the developing world? $2 million from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation are on the table to help researchers at UVM figure it out. We'll talk about that next on Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. 10 years ago, infants in the United States were at risk of contracting rotavirus. The illness causes diarrhea and can lead to dehydration, fever, and in severe cases, death. The CDC reports that almost all children had one bout of rotavirus by the time they were five. But in 2006, the U.S. introduced a vaccine that has dramatically reduced the number of hospital visits for the illness. That's not the case, however, in developing countries. The effectiveness of the vaccine is markedly less in some countries than it is here. Researchers at UVM are trying to figure out why, and they just got a big chunk of money to speed their research along. Ross Colgate is a research analyst at the College of Medicine's Vaccine Testing Center. Ross, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you very much for having me.
Just add a little bit to my description of what rotavirus actually does to the body of a young child.
Your intro was fantastic. Basically, what it does is it causes severe diarrhea that, as you said, leads to dehydration and often to death. Fever and vomiting are the other two common symptoms with rotavirus infection, and it's highly prevalent. In the U.S., prior to the introduction of the vaccine in 2006, about 40% of all hospital admissions and deaths due to diarrhea were attributable to rotavirus. And that statistic remains very consistent across the globe, actually. Diarrhea is one of the top killers of children under the age of 5. That and pneumonia actually are the top two. And again, among diarrheal pathogens, 40% of disease is caused by rotavirus. So it's a pathogen of significant global public health concern.
And how much have those hospital visits for children in the United States decreased since the oral vaccine was introduced?
They have almost vanished. Within a year of introduction of the vaccine, hospitalizations and deaths in the U.S. were halved. And at this point, they're a very rare event.
That's the United States. What's happening in some of the other countries that have introduced the vaccine?
Very similar results. So in Europe, Latin America, and the United States, the vaccines are consistently around 95% up to 100% effective, certainly against severe diarrhea, but also against rotavirus diarrhea in general. So highly effective and safe vaccines at our disposal, but you apply those same vaccines to kids in the developing world and you just get very different results.
Yeah, so what are those results in the developing world?
Well, for about two decades, we've seen study after study after study showing that efficacy in developing world populations is 50% or less. Specifically in Bangladesh, where we've been doing this research, our study from 2010 to 2014 that was also funded by the Gates Foundation and in collaboration with the University of Virginia and the International Center for Diarrheal Disease Research, we found 41% efficacy in our population of 700 babies that we enrolled in the urban slums of the capital city, Dhaka. So very consistent with what's being found globally. Children just not protected against rotavirus at the rates that they are in the developed countries.
And do you have a hypothesis or a sense yet of why the vaccine is so much less effective in countries like Bangladesh?
It's a great question. So the central hypothesis of the parent study, the PROVIDE study, was that a condition called environmental enteropathy, which essentially is it's a change in the structure and the function of the small intestines, basically due to repeated assault from the environment. So kids being exposed to a multitude of bacterial pathogens, other viruses, just really challenging their system to the point where it actually changes the structure of their small intestine. And so that was kind of the core hypothesis of that study, where we were trying to figure out, is this condition, which is not well-defined and very difficult to measure, is this contributing to oral vaccine failure? There is good evidence that environmental enteropathy is highly prevalent in developing countries. So that was the core hypothesis. We conducted two randomized clinical trials within the umbrella study, one on the rotavirus vaccine and another on an oral polio vaccine. So environmental enteropathy is possible. Like I said, we've found it difficult to characterize, although we are finding that gut inflammation is associated with vaccine failure to some extent. Another kind of emerging hypothesis that is looking very promising is that, again, related to the environment, the co-pathogen load in these children is very high. So at any given moment, we're talking about children between the ages of birth, so 0 and 24 months. In the first 2 years of life, at any time, these children may be carrying up to 5 pathogens in their gut that could be causing diarrhea. And so you can just imagine the impact that that has on their microbiome, again, on the physiology of the immune system in the gut. They're facing a lot of challenges. So the co-pathogen load could impact the ability of the vaccine to actually absorb properly, and therefore kind of give them the immune response that they need. Their immune system may not be able to see it because it's busy fighting so many different things. Maternal antibody is also a really important part of this equation. Age at vaccination is something that's been put on the table repeatedly because of this question of whether or not the immunity that's conferred by the mother, whether transplacentally before the children are born or in the breast milk, actually is interfering with the vaccine's ability to take. So in our study, we delayed dosing a bit later than most of the other studies out there. So we vaccinated at age 10 weeks and 17 weeks, as opposed to 6 and 10 weeks, trying to get around some of this protection that is absolutely critical that the child gets from the mother early on in life that helps them survive those first 6 months, but in the context of oral vaccines may actually be preventing the vaccine from working properly.
And did you have any success with that?
We did, actually. While our primary efficacy results were 41% against all rotavirus diarrhea, we did find that the vaccine was 74% effective against severe diarrhea, rotavirus diarrhea. So, and we actually think that that might be attributable to the delayed dosing. Earlier studies in Bangladesh using the earlier dosing schedule were looking at more around the 50% efficacy rate. So it is possible that the delayed dosing actually improved the response.
So as I mentioned, the Vaccine Testing Center has now received $2.2 million in another grant from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. How do you plan to use that money? And if what you're seeing in the developing world is less uptake or less effectiveness of this vaccine, what's the solution that you're working towards?
Yeah. So one of the big kind of unanswered questions in this whole field is really what is going on with the immune system. There are things called correlates of protection that you can measure in children and anybody who's vaccinated, where you look at a specific response in the immune system and say, okay, if you have a response here that meets this threshold, then you'll be protected, and we can be pretty confident that has strong predictive value. That's not the case with rotavirus. We really don't understand very well which elements of the immune system are responsible for protection, whether it's from natural infection or from vaccine. So we're really trying to dig deeper into the immunology behind rotavirus infection. So there'll be a statistical modeling component where we're looking at new and current immune markers, as well as new possible correlates of protection for their predictive value in those first 2 years. We're going to look at new possible correlates of protection that haven't really been looked at before, memory B cells, T cells, and really trying to define better the targets of the immune system. And then we'll also look at blood group. There's some evidence that your blood group may actually put you at different levels of risk for rotavirus infection. The microbiome and zinc has also been shown to correlate strongly with risk for rotavirus diarrhea.
Well, I hope you'll keep us updated. Ross Colgate is a research analyst at the UVM College of Medicine's Vaccine Testing Center. She's helping to uncover why an oral vaccine for rotavirus is effective in the United States and much less effective in some developing countries. Thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Jane.
And now it's time for our mailbag. To read some of your comments, we're joined by Vermont Edition producer Rick Singeri. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Jane. Many of you wrote in response to our coverage of the four murders in central Vermont. One of the victims was social worker Lara Sobel, who was allegedly killed by one of her clients, whose child was taken into state custody. Hilton in Middlesex had this to say: ask anyone in the court system and they will tell you that the most potentially dangerous people are those on the losing side of a contested divorce or a custody battle. No matter how abusive they were to their children or spouse, they still feel justified in their actions and deeply resent the loss. However, it is nearly impossible to predict who will actually turn violent. It would be worth the investment to do more research into how to predict who is most at risk for acts of violence in these cases and how best to intervene to prevent these people from becoming violent. That way, we won't always be saying, if only.
And CM posted this about the language used in the media coverage of Lara Sobel's death. Knowing what a beautiful, caring person Lara was, it was painful to read headlines reporting that, quote, a worker was killed by a mom who was upset about losing custody of her child. Lara was much more than simply a worker. She was also a wonderful mother. Those articles should have read, lovely, caring, dedicated social worker, wife, and mother killed by a callous, cold-blooded murderer.
Last week, we also spoke to psychologist Ronald Miller about his call for a wider set of approaches for treating mental illness, including less reliance on medication. We also spoke to psychiatrist Terry Rabinowitz, who defended the use of medication in certain situations. Scott Waterman, professor of psychiatry emeritus at UVM, wrote in to say that he was disappointed by what he heard from both guests. Scott wrote, "The two guests had distinct opinions on the subject, but neither of them was, in my view, on target with respect to the considerable problems faced by contemporary psychiatry and those it is intended to serve. Dr. Miller's assertion that the public mental health centers in Vermont have lost sight of the value of talking to people with psychotic symptoms is simply out of date, as at least two of them, in Chittenden and Addison counties, have developed innovative and progressive programs focused on exactly that."
And Waterman continues, "Dr. Rabinowitz's equation of treating heart disease by, quote, talking about it with non-pharmacological approaches to mental illness represents an egregious, albeit unfortunately common, misconception. Among the most vital of the brain's functions relate to interpersonal relations and communication. Thus, the notion that only pharmacological therapies used to address the biology of mental illness is a shockingly untutored one, and it's unfortunate that such a demonstrably false and consequential belief was given the imprimatur of authority."
We always welcome your comments, feedback, and suggestions for us. We're on social media at Vermont Edition, or you can email vermontedition at vpr.net.
Rick, thank you.
Thank you, Jane.
That wraps up today's show. The Springfield Telescope Makers are getting ready this week to put on their 80th Stellafane Convention. Tomorrow on the program, we'll talk about the club's history and how Stellafane became a center for stargazing. Send your comments or questions about telescopes and astronomy to Vermont Edition at vpr.net and join us tomorrow at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Patty Daniels, Rick Singeri, and Sam Gale Rosen, with production assistance from Aaron Lucy. Liam Connors directed the show. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. And our theme music was composed by Grace Potter and the Nocturnals. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.